You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Renee Marcos, the CEO and founder of Alice Technologies. Hey Renee.
Hey Brandon, thanks for inviting me.
Glad to have you on. I was super excited once we did our prep call to hear some of your thoughts on your world, because you're doing some really exciting stuff. But why don't you share a little bit with the audience as to who you are and what is this exciting stuff I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure. I am a second generation civil engineer. So I've been my dad gave me a good piece of advice, said study anything you want, just don't do civil engineering. It's like, brilliant. I know what I'm going to do with my life. So I built stuff around the world, underwater pipelines, oil and gas refineries. I was in Afghanistan for a year, designed, built, procured my own jobs as a civilian contractor, not for the army. Ended up doing a PhD at Stanford. Started to research really like how do you apply AI to simulate or optimize construction projects. And then from there, basically now I'm an adjunct professor at Stanford University. And I founded a company called Alice Technologies. And Alice has invented the world's first generative construction simulator. So that's kind of what our claim to fame is. We've invented a system that can take a construction project and then parametrically simulate it for you. So what that means is you can add a crane, add a crew, like you can literally try all the different ways of building it. One crane, two cranes, overtime, no overtime, lots of people, few people, and everything in between. Then it spits out the fastest, easiest, cheapest way to do it.
How in the world did you think of doing that?
I mean, it was pretty easy. It took about 42,000 hours of my life.
So then how long have you been in marketing? Like, where are you at with the company?
Yeah, it's 6 years on the PhD, 8 years on the company. Same idea. So like Edison said, you know, innovation is 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. And like, as I was doing my PhD, I was like, yeah, I'm sure Edison was wrong. You know, the idea is worth, you know, a whole bunch. I mean, the idea is worth like 20%. And then I finished the PhD, started the company. I was like, you know, like I kind of see what he was saying, but he's still wrong. You know, I mean, the idea is worth like 10%. Like now that I look back at it, I'm like, yeah, the idea is worth like nothing, basically.
The execution is where it's all at.
It's just like, I mean, there's a book I recommend people read. It's called How to Fly a Horse. Huh. And a VC told me to read it. And it's the best book on innovation I've read, because it really explains what innovation actually is. And it's just this sheer bloody mindedness of like just hammering away at a problem over and over and over again and kind of unlocking the next layer. And then you know, try 3-4 ways to solve this and solve it, try 3-4 ways to solve it, try 3 ways to solve it, and then unlock the next layer and the next layer. And that's basically what it is. You know, it just keeps going.
So where do you think your ideal customer profile and who you target? Like, where do you go? Like, who do you target?
Yeah, so the software reduces construction duration by 17%, labor and equipment costs by about 13%. We target large projects, 100 million and up. Generally speaking, infrastructure and industrial jobs. We're working on releasing something that we call like Alice, you know, various names internally, hybrid planning, 2D, right, is a catchy one. Like a way to, because Alice is a 3D model-based system. So you basically import a 3D model and run it off the 3D model. What we're building now is a 2D way, 2D version. It doesn't need a 3D model. And I think that actually unlocks smaller, simpler jobs.
Really interesting. Well, like, the stuff you're doing is incredibly difficult. There's a reason why not everyone can do it. So talk to me about like challenges and struggles and like how you got to where you were at. Like, what comes to mind with some of the biggest obstacles that were in your way?
Well, it's not that it is extremely difficult, and it's not that not many people, it's no one. There's not a single organization or company or research paper or research institute anywhere in the world that has come close to solving this. We, as an organization, Alice Technologies is a, I would say, an IP center for our field. We have more information on this specific topic than any university or consulting company or anybody out there. I'm proud of that. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a massive statement to make. So that's awesome.
I can back it up. Yeah, in terms of, challenges, like, I think we got to do something pretty rare because we got to take an idea from inception. And what I mean by that is that we started with conceptual research. So that's like figuring out the pieces, right? Like, what do I have to think about? Like, I need to think about labor and equipment and crews. And like, you know, like early on, here was a big question. Like, is the production rate, so the speed at which you install the bricks, an attribute of the crew, the masonry crew? Or is it an attribute of the task, install bricks? Or is it an attribute of the brick wall that's being built? So that's what I mean by conceptual research. So those are sort of like, you know, think of like whiteboards with little boxes on them and arrows.
Yeah.
And once you're like, okay, well, I got a conceptual model, right? So let's make it work. Let's actually run it. Let's run the simulation. So now you move into theoretical research. So you're looking at a process model. So then we went from conceptual to theoretical. So now the pieces are moving and interacting. And from theoretical, we started building prototypes. And then once you build the prototypes, you often realize that there's a problem with the conceptual model. So you tweak it, tweak the theory, and then rerun it. You go back and forth. And then once you've got the prototype up and running, now you're like, oh, I'm going to build a commercial product. And the commercial product has a very different set of challenges in the sense that when you're prototyping, you're just sort of like, does it work? With commercial product, it's not does it work, but can I make it easy to use and can I get a general, you know, layman to use it? And then from there, we went into commercialization. And so each one of these is, you know, 2-3 years. And so the full journey, I mean, like maybe the first year of my PhD, I wasn't doing much, but that's 12 years of my life. Yeah. For these four phases. And yeah, it's roughly 2-3 years a phase. What are the challenges? I really think that like just keep going, you know. I think like what I've learned is that talent and like pure innate ability is a much, much smaller part of the equation that people let on. You know, it's almost like if you get to the other side of the door, you realize that talent isn't that important. But you won't get to the other side of the door unless you keep going, and you won't keep going if you don't believe you're going to make it, or if you don't believe you've got the talent, or somebody's not telling you you're going to make it. And so I actually believe that the reason most people don't make it is not because they're not talented. It's just because they're unaccustomed to trying things where it takes you 10, 15, 20, 25,000 hours to get it done. And what I think I've realized is like most of the things in the world require 20, 25,000 hours to finish. To give you an idea, the average work week is 40 hours a week. Times 50 weeks, that's 2,000 hours a year. So 20,000 hours is 10, you know, average years. If you're doing 60-hour weeks, you know, that's basically, you know, 3,000 hours, right? So maybe you could do it in six, right? But still, I mean, that's fundamentally like, I think the biggest challenge to pulling something like this off, because this isn't another photo sharing app. This isn't another, you know, fill out the form. This is a fundamental core deep technology that is new. And it's definitely got its upsides, right? Like when you get it, the effing thing to work, like it's a really good day, you know?
The perseverance there to do it though, like what you're talking about is to like inventing something that's never existed before and having the wherewithal of really putting in the work to get there. And I can only imagine how many times you must have failed in order to get it to work right.
It catches fire six times in Sunday. Like it fails over and over and over and over and over and over. Like the default mode is failure. In the entire history of the company, there's been two ideas that we had, two, where someone had an idea and we're like, tried it and it just worked. Like, oh my God, it worked. And so that's over like, you know, 12 years, right? The default mode is just failure. And that's what I've like realized is that that's the fundamental difference between doing the unknown and the known.
How do you keep your head straight with that though? Like, how do you like, because, you know, doing it for a year, okay, doing it for 2 years, maybe, you know, doing it for at least 10 to 12 years, knowing that just about every time it's going to fail and you're just looking for it to work that one time. Like, how do you stay centered?
That is it. That's the conversation, right? That's like, think about it. Let's say you walk in a room and you say, hey, I want everybody that wants to be rich and successful to stand up.
Everyone stands up.
Everybody stands up, right? Maybe there's been like one person sitting in the back who's like, you know, smoking joints on a beach, somewhere happy. and that person's probably happier than everybody, right? That's fair, right? But then it's like, okay, you got 999 people that stand up. And then you say, okay, if I told you, right, that it would take you 1 year to be rich and successful, yeah, everybody stands up. 2, 3, 5. You know, what's interesting is that 7-year mark tends to be, if you want to hit partner at a consulting firm, 7 years. You want a tenure track professor, 7 years. You want, like, a lot of things start to kind of change at that 7-year mark.
Then too, I mean, the other part of that question, I would think, is how much are you willing to sacrifice and give up for 7 to 10 years to actually make it work?
Not only that, it's like, so then the last piece is, how many of you are willing to put 7 years in? By the way, and the average time to get a business up and running is 7 years. Interesting. And I actually don't think it's because there's something inherently about the seven, like, that you've done the right amount of work. I just think that it's people quit, right? That's why it's that 7-year number.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the average is most businesses fail within the first 5 years. Like, there's a cliff of the first year, and then there's the second cliff is like the fifth year is where they.
Yeah, and so to answer the question, like, what is it that keeps you going? Like, what I joke, or like anyone listening to the podcast, it's like success is about how well you can lie to yourself, you know. And it's like, and well, it's interesting. Like, I mean, it's an interesting process because, like, at first you're like, oh, I'm doing this to change the world, to save the world. The world needs to, like, all these like noble things, right? And then like you run out of that energy, and at some point you're like, you know, I'm just doing this to like make money, right? And then, or, you know, have dates with pretty people, right? Like, that runs out. Like, whoever you are, whatever fuel you're on, it runs out. And I think, to me, the cool thing about the game is like finding that next fuel, right? And that's why I do it, right? It's like sort of figuring that piece out. But
awesome. Like, I was just on the phone call with one of our investors, and we were just talking about a bunch of stuff. And you know, we started talking about the economy and where things are at and all of that. And, you know, she was like, how do you always have such an optimistic view of kind of where you're at and what keeps you going and all of that? I'm like, I don't think it's really so much an optimistic view. It's, I'm not done yet. I'm not giving up. We've got more to do, and we're just going to find a way to do it. And figuring out through the years, like, how do you, to your point, how do you tap into something that gives you the drive to go on when you're like tired and beat up and, you know, just failed and failed and failed and failed and failed. And I do agree with you. I think that's what makes someone successful, is they can still figure out where does it come from and how do you keep going.
I mean, that's basically it, right? And that's the rare.
Yeah, and it can't just be money, or it can't be just fame, because usually when you're going through it, you're not making a lot of money and you don't have a lot of fame.
No, I mean, what I was going to say is, like, you know, you ask that room of people, like, who's going to be willing to put 7 years to be rich and successful? That answer still might be a high percentage, but the minute you put probability into it and say, who's willing to put 7 years for a 50% chance of success? Who's willing to put 7 years for 10% chance? Like, that's where people are like, oh, hell no. And so that's how I think it actually works, right? And so, you know, and the truth is, like, I was the lowest paid person at Alice till we closed our first deal. Right. I mean, earning $70,000 a year in the Bay Area, like, trust me, it's.
I lived in the Bay Area. That's hard.
Yeah, it sucks, man. I was $400 short every month, you know? And, like, you know, the investor, like, I mean, at some point, the investor will, like, give yourself a raise. And I said, no, I don't think so. Right. I don't. That's not what I want to do. But, like, the flip side is that, like, I think one of the things I'm realizing, you know, I'm also getting older, right? I just turned 41. Like, I think one of the things I'm realizing is that if you're playing that game, you're inherently forced to look at other values outside of what most people are tapped into. What neighborhood do you live in? What car are you driving? What watch do you have? Where do you go for vacation? Like, because, you know, you can't really afford any of that crap. And so, you know, you do get, like, what I'm saying is that there's there's a lot of difficulty in the journey, but there are some advantages. And one of the advantages is that you're not stuck in this sort of, I don't want to call it rat race, but like you're not spending all day every day thinking about like, you know, your next paycheck, right? Or you know, like if only I had X, my life would be so great. You know, you do think in terms of like, oh, if only I could get this darn thing to work, you know, I'd be less miserable.
Yeah, I mean, I know with my first company with Talent Rover, like we had, it was a battle, like, and it was exhausting. I was constantly on a plane. I would spend 2 weeks a month literally flying around the world every month, worried about cash flow, worried about is it going to work and all that. And then when we got acquired, you kind of look back at it and just go, holy shit, we pulled it off. And all the pain, all the struggle, you kind of forget like how bad it felt. And for me, it was, I felt really proud. I'm glad I sacrificed what I did. Like I had just started a relationship right when I decided to build Talent Rover. And I had to have the conversation of like, you're number two, like the company's number one, and you've got to be okay with that if this is going to work. And it worked. We're still together. But it's not easy doing what you're doing and what I love to do. What about, I know in the prep call, we talked about, you had a couple like major crises. And one of the themes that stood out to me was grow too quickly and don't grow fast enough. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think like inherently, you know, I've played this game for 8, 9 years, depending on what you're counting, right? I don't think that it is possible to, like, don't get me wrong. There are certain people that found a business and they like, they hit that like product that the market's waiting for. There's a gap in it. The technology's ready. Cloud services came out. Like just this like set of factors that all like, boom, come together. And it takes off like a rocket ship. And everyone's happy and it's a walk in the park and God bless them. And it happens. Like I'm telling you, I know those people.
It's rare, but it does happen.
That's what I'm saying. It's really, really effing rare. You know, most of the time it's a slog. You know, 7 years in, it's just starting to sort of pick up. 8, 9 years in, you're sort of like, you know, taking a breath. Like, and so what I guess I'm trying to say is like, I do not believe that in most cases, especially like as a first time founder, like even, you know, second, third, fourth, like I just don't think it's possible that you can build a business where you somehow have some crystal ball and you're like, oh, I know exactly at what speed to hire my salespeople because I know what my sales requirements are going to be 6 months from now. And I know exactly, you know, how much like cash to burn and I know what my product's going to be doing. Like you can't predict how all the pieces are going to come together. And so you're inherently having some capacity misalignment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've founded four companies and there is no magical crystal ball. Each one's very different. Each one has different struggles. Each one different life cycles as far as how fast do they grow and all that. And, you know, I think you do get some advantage for having gone through it before. You can kind of expect certain things. But I think when I launched my second company, Place, I thought I had it more figured out than I did because I've done it before. But it's a different industry, different product, different customers. And it's still a whole different rat race.
Exactly. And it's like, even if it was the same company, same, your head of sales quit, you're something else. Like, you know, the main customer just pushed you in a certain direction that you didn't think you were going to go into. And you did it, right? And you spent the resources building that feature, whereas everyone else in your ecosystem on the other, like, you're always sort of playing this whack-a-mole game. And so I don't think that it's like, I think that because, I guess the biggest message I would have is because we go to school and we get given these like known tasks, like, you know, when you get your homework, people know what it should take. They know what the answer is and they grade you based on the known answer. Right. And so we kind of like think like get really imbued with this like false expectation of how work actually works, you know. And like when you look at building large complex systems that involve a lot of people doing like real things that haven't been done before, then that pattern is always the same. Like yes, there are rare exceptions where it just takes off, right? And God bless those people. And I'm really always so happy to hear that. But I've known people that are smarter than me, harder working than me, more experienced than me, right? And you look at the way that their business is going, and it's usually like, crap, I didn't see X coming, or shit, like I just realized like that we hired too many people or too few. So to answer your question, like, yes, it's always inherently, it's not just grow too fast or grow too little. It's a capacity game of all the different systems that you have, whether it's your product, your engineering, your sales, your customer success, your marketing, your finances, right? And all those things come together, and each one of them plays off the other. So it's tricky to get it to all line up at like ramp at the same, you know, scale, right?
Yeah, and then throwing in economic conditions and everything else. Like it's whack-a-mole is an understatement of how challenging it is, because you're just, and every day is like, you know, early on I thought, okay, if I just get here, everything will be fine. Well, when you get there, it's a whole different world with a whole different set of problems that you got to go through.
I mean, you look at you look at Steve Jobs, right? I mean, friggin' Bill Gates bailed him out with $130 million, whatever it was. He didn't have the money. He was out. He's like, I'm out. I'm done. It's over. Elon Musk, right? And these are like the top people in the effing world, right? Elon Musk. What is it? A week? 2 weeks? So single digit weeks left in the tank. You know?
It goes back to what we were saying earlier, perseverance. Like, they figured out a way to still pull it off.
I think perseverance, and like, I think one thing you should look at is somebody gave me this piece of advice, right? The business goes up and down and up and down and up and down, but you should take the average, like the average, slope of that up and downness, you know, and that average slope, if that average slope is, you know, going mildly up and to the right on average, then great. If it's kind of pointing downwards on average or straight, then that's a problem. Yeah. That's kind of funny, right? When I, like, even early in the business, and you know this, right? The first year, it's like you go from $1 billion to zero valuation 6 times a day, right?
And on paper, you're worth so much and so little at the same time.
Exactly, right? It's we're billion, zero, billion, zero, billion. You're like, oh my God. And then, like, I mean, you know, as the business grows, it goes from billion to zero and like, you know, maybe like once a day, then it becomes once a week, you know? And now, like at Series B, you know, we're sort of like it the cycle's sort of the 2-3 months, sometimes even 6 months, you know, because it's a big engine. You can't like change it, right? But yeah, I mean, it just best piece of advice, one of the best pieces of advice I got was don't take the high so high and the low so low. You know, just like if it's going really well, it's going to correct. Don't worry. Like, there are ample solutions for this problem. Don't worry. You know, and vice versa, right?
Yeah. And then also, how long do you look at the period? Like, you know, if you go day by day, you're just going to be up and down. If you go week by week, I think you're still going to be up and down. Like, I think even applying that logic of don't take the highs too high and the lows too low, it goes into what you were just saying. What's the aggregate? Like, are you progressing? Can you feel confident and proud of how the business is progressing on a steady basis? And, you know, recently I was preparing for an investor update, and I did a look back of, you know, what's been our growth for one of my companies, Place. Like, what's the last 12 months of growth compared to the 12 months before that? Because Ray Reich, who puts out a lot of SaaS metrics and analytics, published something this week that basically said, you know, I think in 2022, the average growth rate for a company between like 1 and 5 million in revenue is 50, I think it's 55%. And then in 2023, it's supposed to be 60%. And, you know, I was in kind of a shit mood because things weren't going well. We didn't get a deal I thought we were going to do. And I was just in that headspace as I was looking at this stuff. And I looked back and I was like, well, we've actually grown 63% in that time period. So we're actually beating the average in what's been a pretty tough environment for us, because we sell to tech companies and tech companies just aren't spending a lot of money right now. So doing what you're saying is like, how can I look at what we've actually done and figure out where do I think we're at without getting the daily emotional like drain that you have or the high that you have when you win a big deal or whatever. I think it's foundational to keep a level head.
I think one of the like key things that I've learned, and this is like for any entrepreneur or anybody that wants to go do anything like crazy, do not tie your value to the success of your business. You know, that's like super, super important. Like, if your business does great, that doesn't mean that you're great. And if your business does crap, that doesn't mean that you're crap, right? You know, your true friends are still going to be your friends. You know, your boyfriend or girlfriend or wife or husband is still going to, you know, be your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband, right? No matter what. And I think like it helps in a lot of ways, right? To realize that like your value is not tied to the value of the business or success of the business. And I think it just gives you a little bit more freedom to kind of breathe, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a question I always like to ask on the show, because we are getting closer to time. What do you think, what would be your advice to other founders or execs? Like, what should they be focused on right now?
My advice is don't take my advice.
Don't take your advice? Why do you say that?
You know, I think like, you know, man, I think that you got to pick your style and stick to it. You know, there's so many types of leaders. There's people that are just like, you know, excuse my language, like assholes, right? And, you know, they're just out for themselves and just screw everyone else. I'm just going to, you know, do what's right for me, you know, and it works, you know, in certain cases, right? There's people that are the opposite and it works, right? There's people that are organized, there are people that are disorganized, there are people that are meticulous, there are people that are flat organization. There's just so many different ways to skin the cat, right? I think that like you gotta find like, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that like I wouldn't try to emulate someone else. Steve Jobs did it his way, Elon Musk did it his way, and all these other people did it their own way, right? Find what works for you and stick to it. Because what that means is the people that work in with that type of managerial style, that type of philosophy, will be attracted and stay. If you keep changing, right, then it changes. So that's why I mean, like, you know, every person is unique. Every business is, you were saying it, right? Even four businesses are all different. Every person's different, right? Like what works for me managerially will not necessarily work for you, right? And that's one of the things where you see business partners, right? That, you know, number one cause of startup failure is founders not clicking, right? And if they, and on the other hand, like I really, you know, there's many examples of, you know, two, three founders that really work well together, right? And then they just play off each other's strengths and weaknesses. So, yeah, so that's my advice. Just figure out what it is that you are uniquely positioned to do and, you know, screw everybody else.
I mean, I think it's pretty good advice to follow. So I don't know if I would agree with you when you said don't follow that advice, but it's a really, really good, interesting take. Well, I thank you for coming on. I know you've got a lot going on, so I appreciate you doing the show. And I think there's a lot to take away from the episode.
Hey, Brandon, real pleasure to be here. And yeah, have a great, great day, great week.
All right. Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.